A Contra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Contra AI. Welcome everyone to the deep dive. Today we're tackling something that sounds maybe a bit heavy, but trust me, it's fundamental. We're getting into Peter Atkins' brilliant work, The Laws of Thermodynamics.
Yeah, and if you hear thermodynamics and, you know, your eyes glaze over thinking about old textbooks, well, Atkins really turns that on its head.
He does, doesn't he? His whole point is these aren't just some dusty physics rules.
Not at all. They are like the ultimate rules of the game for reality itself. They dictate why coffee cools down, why engines work or don't work perfectly, and even, well, the ultimate fate of the entire universe.
So that's our goal today. We want to unpack these four laws, zeroth, first, second, and third, and show you why there's so much more than just formulas.
Exactly. Understanding them helps explain the why behind pretty much every physical process, why things happen the way they do.
And why things like, say, perpetual motion machines are just fundamentally off the table. It's essential stuff.
It really is. It's the basic logic of how things work. And Peter Atkins is a fantastic guide for this.
He really is.
Yeah.
For anyone who doesn't know, Atkins is a major figure in chemistry, emeritus professor at Oxford, top-tier physical chemist.
Right. Wrote the textbook physical chemistry that generations of students use. So the scientific chops are absolutely there.
Definitely. But what makes his take on this subject so compelling isn't just the rigor, is it?
No, it's this blend. He's got the hardcore science, obviously, but he approaches it with a kind of philosophical awe. The source material actually calls him a rationalist mystic.
I love that term, rationalist mystic. It captures it perfectly. He sees this profound, almost spiritual elegance in the cold, hard logic of these laws.
Yeah, he sees thermodynamics as this fundamental lens for understanding existence. And this book, The Laws of Thermodynamics, is really his effort to bring that deep significance to, you know, a curious general reader.
Moving beyond just the equations to the really big picture implications.
Precisely. The book's main thrust is that these four laws together tell the story of energy and this other crucial concept, entropy.
And if you get how those two dance together,
then you basically understand the fundamental script the universe follows, why things happen spontaneously in one direction and not the other.
And why some things, like getting something for nothing energy-wise, are just impossible.
Yeah.
Forbidden by the rules.
Right. It's a framework.
Yeah.
And Atkins takes you on this journey, starting with something super simple, like how a thermometer works.
Yeah, very concrete.
And then zooms way out to think about the arrow of time, how life fits in, the cosmos. It's quite a ride.
So where does he start? Not the first law, surprisingly.
No, he starts with the foundation, which is actually called the zeroth law. It's kind of funny. It was named last,
yeah,
but realized it had to come, well, zeroth.
The prequel law. So what does it do?
It establishes something that seems blindingly obvious now. The idea of thermal equilibrium and temperature itself.
How so? It just says things reach the same temperature, right?
Essentially, yeah. It says if system A is in thermal equilibrium with system C, think of C as your thermometer, and system B is also in equilibrium with C.
Then A and B must be in equilibrium with each other. Like, if my coffee and my soup both read 80 degrees on the same thermometer, they're at the same temperature.
Exactly. It sounds trivial, but formalizing that allows temperature to be a consistent, measurable, transferable property. Without it, the whole idea of a reliable temperature scale kind of falls apart.
Okay, so it sets the stage. Temperature is real and consistent. Got it. Then comes the big one.
Then comes the first law. This is the one most people have probably heard of, the conservation of energy.
Right. Energy can't be created or destroyed, only changed from one form to another.
That's it. The universe's energy budget is fixed. It's like a bank account. The total amount never changes. You just move it around.
So if you heat something up or do work on it, you're just increasing its internal energy. You're not making new energy out of thin air.
Precisely. The change in internal energy, delta U, is just the heat added plus the work done, delta U plus W dollar. Simple bookkeeping.
And this immediately kills off what? Perpetual motion machines.
Of the first kind, yeah. Any machine that claims to produce more energy than it consumes, it's violating this fundamental law. Can't be done. Full stop.
Okay, so energy is conserved, but that doesn't explain everything, does it? Like, why does my coffee cool down? Energy would still be conserved if the room got colder and my coffee got hotter, right?
Exactly. The first law is about the balance sheet. but it doesn't tell you which way the transactions naturally flow. That's the job of the second law.
The famous one. This is where entropy comes in, right? The measure of disorder.
Right? Disorder, or maybe better, the dispersal of energy. The second law basically states that for any spontaneous process in an isolated system, the total entropy always increases. Things naturally go from ordered states to more disordered states.
So coffee cools because the heat energy spreads out into the cooler room. That's a more dispersed, higher entropy state for the energy.
Exactly. Atkins highlights two ways to think about this. There's the Clausius view, entropy. As energy spreading out, becoming less concentrated, less useful, heat naturally flows from hot to cold for this reason.
Makes sense. And the other view?
That's Boltzmann's insight, which is even deeper. He linked entropy to probability and the number of microscopic arrangements, what he called W, that correspond to a macroscopic state. The famous equation zero equal te log dollar.
Okay, unpack that a little.
Think about the air molecules in a room. There are vastly more ways for them to be spread out evenly than for them all to be crammed into one corner.
Right, the spread out state is just overwhelmingly more probable.
Precisely. So spontaneous change happens because the final state, higher entropy, more disorder, more spread out, is just statistically far, far more likely. The universe tends towards the most probable states.
And this constant, unstoppable increase in entropy, that's related to time.
It is time's arrow. The second law dictates irreversibility. Processes go one way towards higher entropy. That's why we remember the past, lower entropy, and not the future. You can't unscramble an egg because the scrambled state has much higher entropy.
Wow. Okay, so the second law explains direction and time. What else? Does it limit things?
Oh, absolutely. A huge implication, first worked out by Sadie Carnot, is that the second law sets a fundamental limit on the efficiency of any engine that converts heat into work.
You can't get 100% efficiency.
Never, because some energy must be dumped into a cold reservoir, like the environment, as waste heat to satisfy the entropy increase requirement. There's always an entropy tax you have to pay.
So perfect efficiency is another impossibility, thanks to the second law.
Right. And for things like chemistry or biology, how do we know if a reaction will just happen on its own?
Yeah. How do we combine the energy change, first law, and the entropy change, second law?
That's where Gibbs free energy comes in. Atkins explains it well. It's a concept that cleverly combines enthalpy, related to the first law's energy, and entropy. A process will happen spontaneously if it leads to a decrease in the system's Gibbs free energy.
So that G value tells you if something's downhill thermodynamically.
Essentially, yes. It's the ultimate decider for spontaneity under constant temperature and pressure, which is relevant for, you know, most chemistry and biology on Earth.
Okay. Zeroth. First, second.
Yeah.
What's left? The third law.
The third law deals with the absolute limit of coldness, absolute zero, or zero Kelvin.
What does it say about it?
It states that as you cool a perfect crystal down towards absolute zero, its entropy approaches zero. It's the state of theoretically perfect order where all thermal motion stops.
The ultimate tidiness. Can we get there?
But the kicker is you can't actually reach absolute zero.
Why not?
As you get incredibly close, it becomes exponentially harder to remove those last little bits of energy. Quantum effects also play a role. Basically, the third law implies absolute zero is an unattainable limit. You can get ridiculously close, but never quite there.
Okay, so those are the four pillars. Taken together, what are the big messages Atkins wants us to take away?
Well, one huge theme is that these laws represent a universal constraint. Atkins calls them the closest we have to universal legislation. They apply everywhere, to everything, from molecules to galaxies.
There's no escaping them.
None. And recognizing that gives you clarity. You know the boundaries. You know what's possible and what's fundamentally not, like perfect efficiency or creating energy. Science and engineering work within these rules.
That makes sense. What's another key theme?
The distinction between quantity versus quality of energy.
Ah, right. First law says quantity is conserved.
But the second law says its quality inevitably degrades. As energy spreads out, entropy increases, it becomes less concentrated, less able to do useful work.
So it's not just about having energy, it's about having useful, concentrated energy. That's huge for thinking about energy resources, isn't it?
Absolutely. A vast amount of low-temperature heat in the ocean is still a huge quantity of energy, but its quality is so low, it's very hard to extract useful work from it efficiently.
Fascinating. And the third big theme, this one feels profound.
It's about life as a thermodynamic paradox, or maybe not quite a paradox.
We seem so ordered, right? Complex structures, low entropy locally. Doesn't that violate the second law?
Not at all. That's the crucial point. living organisms are these amazing temporary pockets of low-entropy thermodynamic eddies, as Atkins puts it.
Temporary eddies, I like that.
But we maintain this local order only by constantly taking in high-quality energy, like food, and chucking out low-quality energy, heat, and waste products, thereby increasing the total entropy of our surroundings by a much larger amount.
So we pay the entropy price.
We pay a hefty entropy price to exist. Life doesn't break the second law. It's a beautiful example of the second law operating on a grand scale. We surf the wave of increasing universal entropy.
That reframes, everything. Atkins has such a way with words, too. Some of his lines really stick with you.
He really does. The source material highlighted a few gems, that one we already mentioned. Entropy is time's arrow.
So concise, so powerful. It just perfectly captures why processes are irreversible, why the past is different from the future.
Yep. And another great one summing up the first two laws. Energy is conserved, but its quality degrades.
That's the whole story in eight words, isn't it? The balance and the inevitable decline in usefulness.
It really is. And then the overarching statement about their power. The laws of thermodynamics are the closest we have to universal legislation.
Defines the boundaries of reality. It's humbling, actually.
It is. And these aren't just abstract ideas. They have incredibly practical, real-world applications.
Like in engineering, right. You mentioned efficiency limits.
Exactly. Designing anything, from a power plant to a refrigerator, is fundamentally a negotiation with the second law. You're always trying to minimize that unavoidable entropy increase to get the most useful work out.
A refrigerator is a good example. It makes things colder inside, which seems like decreasing entropy locally.
But it only does that by using external work, electricity, and dumping even more heat, and thus entropy, out the back into your kitchen. The net entropy change of the universe is always positive. You pay for that local cooling.
Right. And I guess you could even apply the entropy idea metaphorically.
Yeah.
Like, to organizations or even just getting things done.
People certainly do. You know, the idea that systems naturally tend towards disorder unless you actively put energy and effort in to maintain structure and fight off waste and inefficiency requires constant vigilance.
Keeps the metaphorical coffee from cooling down too fast.
Something like that. But maybe the biggest application is just a shift in perspective.
Hmm.
Understanding irreversibility, understanding limits. It changes how you view the world.
How so?
Well, recognizing that some processes, physical or even societal, are effectively irreversible, really underscores the importance of making careful choices. You can't always just rewind the tape if things go wrong. The second law has consequences.
That's a really powerful thought. For me, wrapping up, what really struck me is this weird mix of humility and empowerment.
How do you mean?
Well, humility because, you know, we're bound by these ironclad laws. We can't just wish them away. But also empowerment, because understanding the rules means we can play the game much more intelligently. We know how energy flows, how to harness it within the constraints.
Yeah, knowing the limits lets you optimize within them. That's a great point. For me, the lasting insight is that incredible connection between destruction and creation.
Go on.
The fact that the universe's relentless drive towards increasing disorder, the degradation of energy quality, is actually the engine that drives complexity. It forces energy to flow. And it's in those flows that structures, stars, planets, even life itself can emerge and organize for a time.
So creation rides on the coattails of universal decay.
In a way, yeah. It's this deep paradoxical relationship. The emergence of order is powered by the overall tendency towards chaos. It's a fundamental cosmic trade-off.
It really does feel like the grand narrative underlying everything. Mm-hmm. Peter Atkins gives you the keys to understanding that narrative.
He certainly does. A vital perspective for anyone curious about how the world truly works.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.